Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. Today's weather is not the greatest, but I think the sun's going to come out soon, so I hope you guys are ready for that. It is officially week 6, Tuesday afternoon. I hope everything is going well for you guys. And today we actually have a guest I will be interviewing, and I told you guys I'll be bringing back the interviews. And be excited for today's episode because it's going to be a great one like all the episodes I do. All right, so before we get started, why don't we get through some ads and some PSAs and we will get right to it. So here we go. I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
From 1951 to 1992, First Nation and Inuit children were placed in non-Indigenous communities to live in private homes to attend school. If you or someone you know participated in this program, compensation may be available. For details, please visit boardinghomesclassaction.com or call 1-888-499-1144 for details on eligibility, support, or opting out.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Loading Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Royal Otis, live in concert, coming to the PNE Forum in Vancouver on October 22nd. Fresh off the heels of their debut album, Prats in Pain, and the viral cover of Murder on the Dance Floor for Triple J's Like a Virgin, don't miss the Australian duo on their biggest tour yet, Royal Otis, Glory to Glory Fall Tour. Tickets are on sale now at ticketleader.ca. TICKETLEADER.CA.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe, estudio.cafe.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. As I mentioned today, today's episode is going to be an interview. So I hope you guys are excited. Why don't we get right into it? Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, Hi, my name's Sally White. I'm in my first year of the Masters of Children's Literature program here at UBC. And I'm very excited to be on the show.
Thank you, Sally, for coming on my show. It's definitely a busy time of the year. We are officially, which I can't believe, already halfway or in our halfway point of the semester. So it's crazy how fast time flies.
Yeah. I was just telling you that I have a midterm this week, and I was reeling at how quickly that came up.
Yeah, no. Yeah, the assignments, the essays, the midterm exams are coming in. So for those of you who are experiencing this as well, good luck. I hope you guys persevere through this because at the end of the month, Halloween is coming.
Yes.
Which is great. I can't wait to see all of your guys' costumes and eat all the chocolate and candies. But yes, Ellie, do you want to give a brief introduction of how you came about pursuing a master's degree in children's literature?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can tell you sort of my history of how I got here. I can also tell you a little bit about the program itself, because I feel like a lot of people don't, it's really small within UBC, so I feel like a lot of people don't even really know it exists. I'm personally coming to it from the publishing side of things. For the last 7 years before this, I was working for a subscription, a children's subscription book box. I was curating a branch of the companies that I worked for. So I would choose a new book every month, work with publishers to hear like what they had coming out every season. My age range was 8 to 12. So I got to read a lot of really, really great kids books. And then I would like build a theme around that. And we'd send a box out to our subscribers every month. So that's what I was doing for the last 7 years. Before that, I did my undergrad at SFU. I majored in communications with a minor in publishing. And before that, I did my diploma of, gosh, what did they call it? Diploma of desktop publishing, digital publishing, the publishing program at Langara College. And during all of that, I also worked at a toy store for a while. I was a bookseller at the incredible kids books that we have here in town. It's a specialty bookstore. So a lot of the stuff that I was doing sort of throughout my, I wouldn't have called it a career up until the last 7 years, but everything sort of was revolving around kids and the media that they consume, sort of unintentionally at first. And then I realized that it was something that I really, really loved and cared about. So when the job that I was previously doing came to an end, I was trying to figure out what to do next, and I found out about this program, and it's something that I would have relocated for, but it happened to be in UBC, which is my backyard. I'm from Vancouver, so that was very lucky.
When you say you were working at a publishing company, if I'm correct?
I was working for a book subscription box. So I worked really closely with publishers, a lot of their like the editorial team and the like special sales and things like that. Publishing adjacent, but very much in the children's book world.
What kind of role did you play in that job? Was it the creation of children's literature or stories, or was it more of the industry itself of publishing itself?
It was more the industry itself. It was on the end of, you know, the thing has already been written and edited and put or is about to be launched into the world. And that was when I got to get access to it and read things. I'd get to read things a little bit early, a few months before they came out. But no, not on the actual like story creation side of things.
And what aspect of children's literature are you interested in? Are you interested in the creation of stories now, or is it more of like a research base where you're looking into the content of what the children consume these days?
I'm sort of somewhere in the middle is where my interest lies. I will be getting into a lot of the theory behind the creation of things in the next couple of years with this program. But I've always really wanted to work on the editorial side of things, so working with authors, finding the really great, you know, manuscripts that came in, and getting to put great stories out into the world in collaboration with authors. I think there's a lot of really, really incredible books out there for kids that sometimes don't get the respect that they deserve necessarily. If anyone wants, you know, a list as long as my arm of books that are technically children's books that you should absolutely read as an adult, I'm happy to supply that. But I just lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
Where was I going with that?
That makes sense. I completely agree with you on the fact that there are so many authors who create such beautiful works, and unfortunately, they don't all get to see the light of day. While you were working for that publishing job, was there anything that you learned about the realities of what gets to be published, and kind of understand in a different perspective of going beyond just the fact that, yeah, they didn't get to be published?
In the time that I was there, I saw a huge increase in the diversity of all kinds of the, you know, who was actually getting stories published, who was able to tell stories, tell their own stories. And there were a lot of, like, really interesting, really powerful things that you'd see, like, trends of things being explored. Like, from the time that I started until now, there's a surge of stories about, like, mental health for kids, like 8 to 12 year old kids, so there was a lot of really positive trends in that way, if that's what you're asking. It's also interesting to see sort of what still doesn't get representation, or, you know, a little imprint, or like part of a publishing agency would get some funding for a very specific kind of stories from one cultural group, let's say, and then, you know, in the next couple of years it would shut down. That I saw that happen a few times.
Yeah, I actually want to backtrack a little bit to your degree in communication and your diploma
in publishing.
Publishing, okay. What are some skills that you've learned starting from your communications degree and then moving on to your diploma that you begin to see that's being used in great use with your degree right now? Or even during your job?
Yeah. Well, the publishing diploma that I did at Langara, I really loved. It was a long time ago. I think the program has actually changed quite a bit since I was there. It focused more on, like, desktop publishing and magazine publishing. So I got to learn a lot about typography, which I became a real nerd about. But that doesn't really affect anything that I'm doing today, other than I notice it everywhere. The communications degree that I did at SFU, I actually was originally going to do anthropology, and then I changed my mind for some reason, and sometimes regret doing that because I find anthropology, to be perfectly honest, a lot more interesting than communications. But they didn't offer a major in publishing. They have a master's degree in publishing, rather. But not a major. So I would have majored in publishing if I could. As far as what I learned, honestly, like, I learned how to write. I learned how to study. There's definitely crossover with, like, I'm taking a class in, like, new media and youth, and we're talking about all kinds of things that I talked about in my communications degree with, you know, how we consume media, the theoretical side of things. As far as the kids' books things, I have always been a reader. Reading was super important to me as a kid. And I really care about the stories that are produced for kids and sort of what they mean to kids and then what they mean in a larger cultural context as well. I just find it fascinating.
Do you still read from time to time, whether it's with pleasure or just the sake of observing how children's books evolve? Do you read children's books lately or YA novels?
I do, yeah. I mean, I don't have a ton of time for pleasure reading at the moment. Yes, I am still a big reader. I try to keep on top of, like, what's going on in middle grade because there's just so much coming out every single month. I really love reading middle grade as an adult. It's like, I find it can be a very, like, healing category to read, because you're reading it as an adult, but it's very much talking to the kid inside you. So you're kind of reading it on a couple different levels, and they're fun. You know, they're adventures a lot of the time, and they're sweet and they're funny and they're powerful without being, like, too intense a lot of the time.
Do you ever notice the differences in context or the way it's written? Maybe dialogue, characters that you've noticed throughout the years of reading children's books or middle grade novels. And as an adult, because I feel this too, when I read children's books or YA novels, the way that I perceive the main character is much different. I guess I can, as the reader, as an adult, I can almost feel for the character in a much deeper sense emotionally, mm-hmm. because they're not kind of able to comprehend what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that way, I'm creating a more deeper connection within myself with the character. Do you feel any of those differences now as an adult when you read those novels? And is there anything interesting about that or anything new?
Do you mean, like, rereading something that I would have read as a kid and sort of reinterpreting it? Or do you mean reading current stuff? What?
It would be both, actually. That's a great question. I think for me, it was more about rereading
the
text that I've already read or rethinking the plots, the characters.
Yeah.
But also, I think a lot of the texts that are being emphasized in schools or a lot of the books that I get my hands on recently mm-hmm. are a bit more different. So I'm just wondering if that also occurred for you as well.
It's definitely interesting to reread books that I remember loving as a kid and kind of trying to parse out what it was that hooked me in so much at the time. And sometimes I completely agree with my younger self, and sometimes I'm like, this is really boring, but the imagery is still incredible. I actually think that I should. I don't really read YA. I never have, with a very few exceptions. I think it probably would benefit me to read some YA and brush up on that and kind of reconnect with my teen self as well as my childhood self. But as far as the dialogue goes and you know, the actual storytelling, I don't know. It seems very vague, but good storytelling is good storytelling, and you can just
For me, I noticed that mental health is very, very acknowledged in a lot of children's books as well. And so maybe this can kind of connect to a question of publishing. When you guys, as a person who's been in that environment of publishing books, are they more gravitated towards the interests of children or the goal of educating children, or maybe emphasizing on the lack of knowledge of the context of the books that are being published? What sort of aspects do you think that you've noticed in books that are published?
I mean, all of the above, all of those are being published. You can find books that slot into all three of those categories. I think the ones that connect the most with kids are ones that, like, meet them where they are. So, like I was saying, like, huge rise in, like, representation of anxiety in kids, which makes sense because anxiety is up in kids across the board. But then, like, I think the grown-ups of the world, the people writing the books, also have a much better understanding of it than they did when I was growing up. And so the language actually, like, can reach the kids. Hopefully it's a crossover of both something that, you know, that they can hold on to and find entertaining, and then also has an educational aspect to it that you can kind of come at it from both angles.
Yeah, for sure. I want to touch upon a bit more deeply on the topic of publishing. What exactly about publishing do you think is fascinating and interesting to you? Because is it publishing that you're interested in, or is it the publishing of children's books, or just books in general, or just the whole entire process of what gets to be seen in the world?
I think the industry in general is really interesting. I know that I'm particularly interested in the children's side of things. And I know when I was in school, and then also at my last job, learning about all of the different jobs that I didn't know existed within the publishing world. Like, there's a ton of different jobs in production. There's a ton of different jobs within the editorial department. Then there's, like, sales that I'm like, I didn't know that, like, this very specific thing was a niche within the sales department, and that they all really have to work together in order to fill the bookshelves at whatever your bookstore is, or Amazon, or whatever, wherever you're getting your books from. I'm definitely interested in how those all work together. I know that the zone I want to work in is editorial, but you're working with a lot of other people with a lot of other very niche specialties within that.
Yeah, for sure. I think when I think about publishing, it's always been physical, like a physical hard copy book. But nowadays it seems like a lot, obviously the technology that we're using is evolving. A lot of the content that we consume is digital. There's a lot of audiobooks that are available. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts maybe on the practice of publishing through the era right now, where technology is almost our main source of consumption and also distribution of information?
I think it's a really interesting space right now. I know when ebooks, for example, started hitting the scene, however, a decade plus ago, everyone was like, well, that's the death of publishing. Like, we're not going to print any books anymore. And then that's obviously not the case. Like, book sales are still going strong, and I think will forever be something that people can go turn to outside, like, if you need a little digital detox. I think that there's some really, really cool stuff being done in audiobooks. Like, I've seen audiobooks of graphic novels, and you're like, how on earth does that work? Like, how do you turn a visual form into an audio form? But then they've managed to do incredible stuff with it, with actors and all this really great audio production. I think it also opens up a lot of doors for people who don't want to go through like the, you know, big five publishers. There's so many self-publishing options now. And yeah, you can publish yourself online, or you can record yourself reading something that you've written. There's a ton of options for it, and it's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, for me too, I definitely thought that once, you know, technology and media was getting so big that, you know, physical books, newspapers, magazines would be seen as of less interest,
mm-hmm.
but clearly it is not. And I can tell, I personally would rather read a book as a hard copy than scrolling through a screen.
Mm-hmm.
What are your opinions about the strengths of having a physical hard copy of a book, or being able to touch the fabric of a magazine, or, you know, going through that thin layer of newspaper? What do you think is a feature that just keeps them from surviving in this world?
I think it's just really nice to have that like tactile experience a lot of the time. And I mean, it seems like such an obvious thing to say, but we're all constantly on our screens. So to have something that you can do away from that is the best. I will admit, I never thought that I would read like an e-reader, and then I had to get one for work during COVID and switched quite quickly. I'm probably about 50-50 now, but I know I don't retain things as well when I read them on the e-reader as if I read them on a book. And it's a very different experience, you know, curling up with a book than it is with a little tablet. So I think they're like mentally very different experiences. And I hope we'll always want and need that, even if there's a million other technologies that are alongside it.
Yeah, there's definitely this sense of intimacy that is more strongly drawn into physical books and just physical items than it is to go into bed with a tablet. But I kind of want to go into your program itself.
Mm-hmm.
So first off, how is that process like? Obviously, you did a lot of studying before with your diploma and your communications degree, and you also had hands-on experience in the field of publishing as well. And then you transitioned back into academia. So mm-hmm. that's a journey that you took. So how was that like from your transition of working in the field, having previous experience with your studies, and then coming back to school pursuing a master's?
Yeah. It was about this time last year that I was first starting my application for the program. And I was in a position where I had left my last job in the summer of 2023, and then had the luxury of time off. So I was off for basically a year. I was doing some freelance writing and things like that in that time. But it was like a real like year of recalibration. And by the end of that year, and not having a set schedule, I was very, very ready to jump back into something that was more structured. So I think had I gone straight from my job into school, it might have been a bigger mental transition. But yeah, worked out well for me. My brain was craving something to do. Yeah, the application was interesting. I was really nervous because it had been 7+ years since my last, since anything academic. That was definitely intimidating, but I got to draw on a lot of the, you know, real life experience that I had, and that was incredibly helpful for me. And as I think I mentioned earlier, it's a really funny niche little program. It's kind of choose your own adventure. So it's a structured program, but for lack of a better word, the lack of structure to the program, I think works really well with the way my brain works as well.
Yeah, for sure. How is it like so far with your program? It's been a month. Was there anything that you weren't expecting or new or maybe just familiar, I guess? Mm-hmm. It's a bit too late, but welcome to UBC.
Thank
you
very much.
It's a beautiful campus here.
It really is, yeah.
And so, yeah, what was kind of run me down through your experience in your first month here at UBC and draw upon some of the things that you've learned and noticed in the program specifically.
Sure. A few things that surprised me. One, I am one of four new entries in my program. It's a tiny, tiny little cohort. I was expecting there to be maybe like 20 of us. There's just four of us. And we're all coming at it from really different backgrounds as well. There's a couple of educators. One of us has a theater background. I obviously have the publishing background. But just kind of seeing all the different roads that have led people to the same program, I'm finding really interesting. I was really kind of surprised by in my first week or so was, and I guess this is, a lot of this is the difference between an undergrad and a grad program, but the flexibility and the agency you have over the program, talking to my professors and my advisors, I was initially signed up for a class that I went to the first class and kind of left being like, this really doesn't seem like what I'm here for. It didn't have anything to do with children's books. It was through the education department. And then talking to the advisors and then being like, oh, well, then don't take it. you get to decide this. And that actually led me to the creative writing class. I'm taking a genre fiction writing class with you. And I never would have taken that. I didn't really know it was an option. There was a lot of I'm allowed to do that in the first week or two of realizing that it was really, it's up to me. It's my degree at the end of the day, and I'm going to get what I put into it, basically. That was scary and empowering at the same time, I would say. I also just assumed that everybody was taking four courses at a time. I am taking four courses right now. It's a lot. I am still wondering whether or not I'm going to withdraw from one of my classes. I don't want to, though. But the expectation is not that you have to take a full course load and that it might actually benefit you to take less so that you can focus more on the ones that you're taking. Lots of learning curves. Another thing I just want to shout this from the rooftops, actually. Another thing I learned is that UBC has a Center for Accessibility, which I've never known about in any of the other schools that I've been to. I have a pretty recent ADHD diagnosis, and they're incredible. They will hook you up with so many resources, and they're just so chill and nice and helpful. Realizing that was a resource that applies to anyone who needs it is, go see them, go talk to them. They're great.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me know and the audience know, because I think a lot of the time when we're in university, we tend to miss a lot of the resources that are offered in institutions. And so we need people like you who can, shout them out, because I think UBC does offer a lot of different programs, support groups, and different spaces where you can get help and make your university career much more appealing and just pleasurable.
Yeah.
And which is, I think, is the most important thing. And I love the way that you pointed out how flexible the program is. I when I came into university, I initially thought that university, I think, is really what you make of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the flexibility is definitely apparent when you're doing your degree. But then I also thought that, you know, doing your master's program would be a bit more narrow in terms of what you study. And so it's nice to hear that there's still some flexibility that goes on in your program,
mm-hmm.
because I think that's also a very important thing to enhance your creativity and, you know, what you want to learn. I didn't actually know that master's students take courses that are usually offered in undergrad. Maybe kind of talk about that process as well. Because I think one of the most hectic and most confusing parts about university is choosing your courses.
Oh my God,
and
yes.
Finding the right requirements and, you know, whether this course is okay to take as an elective. So obviously your master's program is different. So maybe run me down through how that process was for you, selecting courses, who to go for help. How was that like?
It was really confusing. I learned that I got into the program, I think, in March, and then was like desperately hoping that they would post the course listings. It took way longer than I wanted it to. But the program that I'm in, the MACL program, it's technically under the iSchool, so the information school, which is where the two or three library programs are. But it's also run through the education department and the English department and the creative writing department, which I can't speak to any other master's program that exists at this school or any other, but this one is really interdisciplinary. So I had a huge wealth of options to choose from. There's a few that I have to take. There's like a specific research methodologies class that I'm currently taking, which I did not expect to like. Turns out it's my favorite class. But yeah, I am currently taking two 300 level classes. Taking a Victorian children's literature class, which satisfies my English credit, I think. And then I'm taking a creative writing class, which, to be perfectly honest, might not count towards my master's. I'm taking it because the professor came highly recommended. But we'll see in the long run if I kick myself for that, because technically I don't think I'm gaining any credits from it. But yeah, it was complex. I think the fact that UBC allows you to sign up for more classes than you plan to take, and then, you know, you can actually shop them around the first couple of weeks, is really great. I would have been stuck in that class that I didn't like otherwise. But as far as choosing the classes, I went through all the records I could. This was also right when everything was transferring over to whatever the new Workday.
Oh, yes. The Workday transition.
Luckily, I had nothing to compare it to, so I wasn't relearning anything. I was just learning how to do it through Workday. But I hear it's not a good system so far, or that it's got some hiccups.
Yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah. So that added to the confusion. But yeah, talking to my advisor, getting advice, making sure that I like really knew all of the options that were available to me. And again, with the flexibility that I have in my program, basically as long as I can convince my advisor that it has something to do with the program and with the, you know, the thesis that I plan to write at the end of all of this. As long as they approve it, it counts.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the interesting part of doing a master's program is that you get to do either your own project or write your own thesis. Do you guys, when you guys enter the master's program, is it more focused on successfully completing the credits and the courses, or do you also get the awareness immediately from whether it's from your advisor or your professors about what kind of works are you going to produce, or maybe what kinds of careers that you are going to pursue through this degree? So is that aspect kind of emphasized as well with your degree, or like an undergrad, at least for me, it's more so about, okay, what can I do to fulfill this course, mm-hmm. do well in the course, consume the context of this course? So how is that difference?
So again, going back to the application process, we had to give like a statement of intent. So basically, you know, this is who I am and this is why I should be in the program. And then alongside the statement, we had to give a, you know, a page or two of this. This might be what I'm interested in writing about for my thesis. So mine was on middle grade, the 8 to 12 age bracket, and most likely something to do with the horror genre. We'll see if that sticks, but that is still what I'm interested in right now. And then when it comes to the classes that I'm taking, like the research methodologies class, for example, I am learning how to write an academic book review, but the book that I'm doing is all about like gothic horror and children's books. And I got to choose that because, so it's really like blending my specific interests with the, you know, the area of study at large. And then the program, you can do like a classic thesis at the end, or a creative project. So like if I wanted to write a novel, that could be my thesis, or somewhere in between where you're blending a classic with a more creative project, kind of a 50-50. But you don't need to know. You don't need to know for sure going in. And the courses that I'm taking now and over this first year, I think will really inform the end goal. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Sure. And the last thing I'd like to ask you is, do you have any goals that you want to achieve through this program? Or is there something that you've envisioned, whether it's something you gain or you learn through pursuing this master's program?
I would like to finish this master's program. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I want to actually, I want to have a thesis that I am proud of by the end of this, in whatever format it ends up being in. And then I would like to turn that into a job in the publishing industry. That's the goal, that I will become, you know, an expert in this focused area, and then we'll be able to turn around and say, you need me on your editorial team because I know all about this.
Do you plan on having a career in Vancouver, or do you have any other places that you want to travel to and experience?
I would love to stay in Vancouver if I can. It's where I'm from. My family's here. Realistically, most of the publishing in Canada is in Toronto. So that's on the table of, you know, really relocating at the end of this. And I've never lived in Toronto. It would be an exciting adventure. But I think everyone in Vancouver is just trying to figure out how to stay in Vancouver realistically. So I'm part of that.
Yeah, no, I relate. I actually really like Toronto. I've been to Toronto about 3 or 4 times. My brother goes to school there, so we would go back and forth and visit him. But yeah, no, Toronto is definitely an option for me as well. I love Toronto, but I also love Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that constant thought of where I should go or stay. But yeah, thank you for sharing. I hope that people can learn from what I do, with interviewing people and what you've said today and what you've shared. And on that note, do you have anything that you want to give advice to any fellow students who are looking into pursuing a master's in children's literature or even trying to get into that application process of pursuing further studies?
I think my number one piece of advice that applies to the application process and just like survival and success in a degree, whether it's undergrad or a grad student, is to get to know your professors, get to know the people running the programs. They know so much and want to talk to you. And I think it really increases your chance of success. So like use the resources available to you, whether it's people or, you know, anything else that the school offers. But yeah, talk to the people who've been through it, get advice and yeah, be a little nosy. I think it helps in the long run.
Yeah. I think being a little nosy is a very funny one, but I think that's true. I think the more you reach out and ask for help, the more you're going to gain.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, it's really about, you know, you trying to pursue something. And I think if you aren't going to take initiative, then who is?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you again. For the last couple of minutes of my show, I always do this with my guests, but I actually come up with some fun would you rather questions.
Ooh, okay.
That are done in a lightning fast mode. So if I give you a question, you just need to give me back an answer within a couple seconds.
Okay.
Today I actually chose a genre, and the genre is foods.
Okay.
Because I love foods lately. I mean, speaking of, is there any type of food that's a comfort food for you?
Ooh.
And whether yeah. it's changed or whether it's always been the same.
Broth and noodles, like whether it's ramen or pho or just, you know, chicken noodle soup that I've made at home. I just want noodles and salty broth.
What kind of ramen do you enjoy?
Oh, I don't know the names of anything.
Is it like Japanese or Korean?
Japanese, I think.
Okay.
Thin noodle.
Mm.
Yeah.
For me, ramen too, but it's mostly the Korean instant ramens.
Okay.
Those ones get me.
I need to branch out and explore yeah. some more.
Yeah, there's so many different types of ramens that I also need to explore as well. But yeah. All right. So you ready?
I hope so.
All right. Would you rather always eat a fruit in either a blended form or solids?
Solid.
Would you rather give up cheese in pizza toppings or the tomato sauce?
Tomato sauce.
Would you rather always have to go out to eat fast food or always have to go out and eat at a minimum 2-star restaurant?
Ooh. Am I paying?
Yes, unfortunately you are.
I'm going to say 2-star restaurant. I can't afford that, but yes, I'm still going to go 2-star restaurant.
Would you rather, when eating pancakes, always have blueberry pancakes, and when having waffles, always have chocolate waffles?
I'm going to go chocolate waffles because I don't like pancakes.
Would you rather have fries or onion rings, but when you have fries, it is seasoned with sugar, and onions, it is seasoned, well, it's not really a season, but it's covered in mustard.
Oh, definitely onion rings and mustard. No okay. question.
Okay. Do you actually like the bitterness of the mustard?
I love mustard.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think mustard looks so delicious on TV, like in cartoons. I remember a specific scene in Pink Panther. and so, you know, I tried mustard and I don't think it's for me.
Okay.
All right. Would you always have unripe avocados or unripe oranges?
Oh, oranges. Yeah. I like sour.
All right. when eating garlic, huh? Would you rather have it extremely thinly diced to the point where it's almost liquidy? Or only cut a whole garlic in half and have it as two big chunks.
I'm going to go like paste.
Okay. Would you rather eat a food that you don't know whether it's expired or not, or always realize that one of your favorite foods are expired at least 20 times a month?
So everything I'm eating is expired, or only my favorite things expired? So sometimes?
So the first one is going to be... This one's a tricky one. So the first one is going to be, would you rather eat a food that is expired, I'll modify this, that's expired, that you don't know how much its expiration date has passed?
Yikes.
Or, and this expiration date eating food instance happens the same amount of times, which is 20 times, let's say, in a month. And the second one is that the expiration dates that have passed that you realized in a food is one of your favorite foods, and that happens a minimum of 20 times, which means it can happen more than 20 times in a month.
I think I'm going to sacrifice my favorite food. I would rather, okay. I think. That one's tricky.
Awesome. All right. The last one is going to be, when eating sourdough, you have to dip it in either peanut butter or Nutella?
Peanut butter.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I realized about peanut butter, it's very hard to swallow.
Yeah.
It's very, I don't even know what the consistency is.
You need something to wash it down with.
Is there a word for the consistency of peanut butter? Because it kind of grabs onto your throat.
Yeah. It's the same as if you're trying to eat, like trying to swallow too much potato at one time. And then you get it's like a dry paste. You need to get some liquid involved.
Is there a food you absolutely despise, or you just can't find yourself to enjoy or even get your hands on?
I wish that I liked fish more than I do.
In general, like the whole ecosystem of a fish?
The whole... I eat more fish than I once did. But like, this sounds so stupid. Every time I like walk past tuna fish in the store, like canned tuna, I'm like, I wish I ate tuna, but then I do, and I'm like, I really don't like this.
No, canned tuna is not the best, I'd say. I love...
It'd be such a useful food to like, though.
Oh, no, for sure. I think canned foods in general, you know, once COVID hit, that's when I realized, well, canned foods are sometimes...
They have a place.
Your hero.
Yes, absolutely.
But for me, I like... Do you ever like sashimi, raw sushi?
I will do sashimi. Yeah, I'll do like a tuna nigiri.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tuna nigiris are good. They're very fatty, but they're good. All right. That's it for our last segment of the show. Thank you again, Sally, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
I hope you guys had a fun time listening. And like I said, I do interviews for my show, open to anyone as well. So honestly, Sally, if you're down to come back again, if you'd like, I'm more than happy to bring you on again. And I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of the day. Fingers crossed that it doesn't rain, unless you like to get wet. In that case, I guess it does rain for you. But for me, I don't know for Sally, but rain is not the best type of weather. But yeah, thank you again for listening. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of the afternoon. I'll see you guys all next week. Bye-bye, everyone.